Here to dive into industry trends with leading ETF experts, this is ETF Spotlight with Nina Mishra.
Hello and welcome to ETF Spotlight. I'm your host, Nina Mishra. My guest today is Kathleen Smith, chairman and co-founder of Renaissance Capital, a global IPO investment advisory firm. We are talking about the IPO market and IPO ETFs today. Kathleen, welcome. Great to have you back on the program.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Okay, so let's talk about 2019 first. So 2019 was, you know, supposed to be one of the best years for IPOs, but maybe it turned out to be a disappointing one. Some of the most high-profile tech IPOs of 2019, including Uber and Lyft, were trading well below their IPO prices for many months. And it seems that private money was chasing growth at all cost, and public market investors were much smarter. So how would you summarize the year 2019 for IPOs?
Well, we would summarize it from the point of view of investors. Mm-hmm. And from that point of view, it was a strong year for investor returns in IPOs. Our okay. Renaissance IPO index was up about 35% for the year. Mm-hmm. However, for companies looking at the IPO market, it was a challenging place. There were fewer IPOs done in 2019 compared to 2018. It's about 20% fewer. And the proceeds were pretty close, but it's because the IPO market was a challenging place for issuers. Mm-hmm. And that the reason for that is that investors have been very price sensitive for a long time, and particularly got a good wake-up call by the challenging large unicorns trying to price their IPOs at premiums or to hold up their private valuations in the public market. Right. So we had some big disappointments with Uber, Lyft, Smile Direct that didn't trade well, and then investors just rejected completely WeWork, which had such mm-hmm. a challenging business model and a very high valuation. So, but in the meantime, the reason why the returns were so good, a lot of other companies, good businesses, came out in the market and performed well. And then the market reconciled some of these other big failures when they first came out to prices that have made sense. And I think we can talk about Uber. It's kind of an interesting recovery story right. so far this right. year. Mm-hmm. But I think the story of 2019 was IPO investors, price discipline, rejecting the growth at all cost model, mm-hmm. and trying to find the appropriate valuation that was appropriate for the public market that have been considered to be pretty high valuations in the private market.
Very interesting. So as you mentioned Uber just now, it seems things are starting to turn around for some of these high profile IPOs. And Uber is in fact up about 36% in 2020. Pinterest is up 25%. Zoom Video Communications is up about 50%. Slack is up about 23%, and Beyond Meat has surged about 68%. Of course, Beyond Meat is still much below its high reached last year. So what's going on this year with these IPOs?
Yes. Well, with the companies that had challenging launches into the IPO market, the Ubers and Lyfts and Pinterest was okay, but still, they've had the rocky road. You know, as the companies have reported results and lockup releases, the selling pressure sort of relieved itself. And a number of companies, notably Uber, mm-hmm. have been focusing on bringing up the time frame for profitability. And right. that move from being unprofitable to profitable is extremely important to investors, as is the lack of selling pressure. So Uber, which is the largest holding in our index, which mm-hmm. the IPO ETF tracks, as you said, is up an incredible 35%, which has helped the returns for the IPO. Our IPO index, we're up about 11% so far this year, which is very strong.
Yes.
And helped by that large holding mm-hmm. in Uber. Many of the other companies you mentioned, the software service companies, which have been many of the constituents that are in our product, have been just investor favorites. They are expensive stocks, but they're software companies. And I think in the last month or so, investors have been trying to find growth companies that may not have to worry too much about what's happening in China. So there's a lot of interest in the software service companies, which have also helped the returns for the IPO market so far this year.
Yeah, software companies have been doing very well this year. And as you mentioned, because they are, you know, largely immune from global growth slowdown that may be caused by coronavirus-related concerns. So now let's talk about this year. How many companies are expected to go public this year? And how many of those are unicorns? What is the amount that is expected to be raised? And how does that all compare with 2019?
This is a very key question and hard to determine.
Okay.
It's very hard to determine. Mm-hmm. So last year, $46 billion was raised, mm-hmm. and I think that we should be in that territory, but we are starting out a little more slowly, in part due to the coronavirus and China.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a huge backlog of unicorns, venture-backed and PE-backed companies. They're really large companies that have been private too long that really need to go public. So we would think that we're going to get the dollar volumes of issuance to hold up. Maybe the numbers might still be kind of low, which they were in 2019. We only had 160 IPOs compared to 192 the year before. I think that you'll find we can see lined up already some major industrial companies that are going to be raising 500 to a billion or so in capital, that they're going to be, they're lining up to go public now. We can see their filings. I can name them, but at the right when you want.
Mm-hmm.
But also in the communications area, Warner Music is lined up to go, and they could have almost $1 billion IPO. With an $8 billion or so valuation. And then in the consumer brand area, we're seeing Cole Haan has just filed its prospectus, the premium shoemaker, and J. Crew's Madewell is also in registration. And so they should be some notable deals. So essentially, and we know that Airbnb is on the horizon, one of the most highly valued unicorns.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many more. Stripe, for example, at a valuation similar to Airbnb. So there's just so many companies. And, you know, financial investors, such as private equity firms and venture capitalists, aren't in business to hold their investments forever. They have to find liquidity. And we can see this drive for liquidity. It's there. It has to happen. And IPO markets, the window is not always open, so there is a recognition that these companies can't stay private forever and have to go public and be ready to go public, knowing the public market is rejecting the growth at all cost model. So all the companies, I'm sure, are being told, you have to hurry up and show profits because we need to get you public.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
All the ones I mentioned are all profitable companies just now.
Okay,
so there's no one that we see. Well, I'm not sure about Airbnb. But these others I've mentioned, the industrial companies, Warner Music, the consumer brands, they're all profitable companies.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, if about Airbnb, I read that they had a loss of $320 million net loss for the 9 months through September last year. And that was according to the Wall Street Journal. But for Airbnb, I read that they may opt for a direct listing instead of an IPO. Do you think they'll go that route?
I know that that is the rumor, and that I am certain that they are considering it. And there's been a big push by the venture capital community to try to find another way to go public.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that the public market is not treating their companies as generously as they have in the private market. Mm-hmm. So the direct listing, which has been done by Slack and also Spotify, but it was not about raising new capital. It was just about getting the company public. The approach was, how do we both save money and go public at the highest price possible and allow all our investors to sell right away? So that equation that may work for the venture, the companies themselves, but it's not really a good equation for investors who are looking and saying, how can I get a good return and make sure I trust the company that it's produced its results before the insiders sell, before I have a chance to make money. So I think that that narrative of trying to sell at the highest price and allow everybody to sell right away doesn't really work well for investors. And we can see that Spotify, for example, which is a holding in our ETF, has been one of the sort of less attractive holdings. It hasn't done much. Mm-hmm. And Slack hasn't done too much either until somewhat recently. Its performance has been really mediocre. When it went public at a really high valuation. Mm-hmm. And so it's had to work time into getting that stock price or the earnings and the results connected with its stock price. So it hasn't worked that well for investors, and I think investors are going to be critical of, we're critical of it. We think that it would be best to wait when you see a direct listing. There's no reason to run in there. And clearly, when you do these transactions, you need someone on the buy side who's going to own the shares. And if investors sort of ignore them for a while, knowing that, you know, the deck is stacked against them, it'll be hard to get them done. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that Airbnb is studying this considering maybe there could be some value to the IPO process as it exists. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, it's more expensive, but one can always negotiate those fees with the underwriter. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why that can't be done. Mm-hmm. But the existing IPO process, in large part, really does work to find the best price discovery and find returns that investors are looking for.
So out of all the companies that are expected to go public this year, and you mentioned many of them, which are the ones investors should really watch? Which are the ones that you think are really healthy and will probably do well?
Well, I think the ones that don't get so much attention are good ones to look at. I think some of these industrial companies, there's one called AZEK, A-Z-E-K, and that's a PE-backed company, and they make wood substitute products for the residential and commercial construction. This company has about $800 million in sales, strong operating profitability, and is growing over 15%. It's growing. It's got strong margins, so a strong place in its industry. Mm-hmm. So we think that one is worth looking at. We'd keep an eye on the Warner Music IPO. Okay. There's the trends are pretty good in the music business and for music publishers, and so we think there'll be a lot of attention on that one. Mm-hmm. And then with Airbnb, I think we certainly want to look at it. We have to study it. You know, we don't want it to be like WeWork, where, you know, you open it up and realize there's so many things, of course, that weren't said mm-hmm. that are sitting in the prospectus. Mm-hmm. You know, we only get the headlines about how good the company is. We have to look inside and look at, you know, there's a lot of regulatory risk and other right. things that are happening with all of these sort of disruptive companies. But we'd look at Airbnb. I just think it's important that Airbnb really consider the manner in which it's going to tap public mm-hmm. investors and take a look at whether, because if they do the direct listing, we think investors should sit back and wait, because the others there was no reason to rush into any of the others. And structure matters for investors. And I think it's important. The idea of having a lockup, having insiders not sell for 180 days, allows a couple of quarters of results before insiders sell, meaning mm-hmm. they need to deliver on what they're saying in their presentations. And that's important for investors. It's the playing field has to be level as much as possible with the information investors get versus what the company knows and what it's doing. Mm-hmm. So there should be some kind of a lockup arrangement to assure investors that the company is going to perform as it suggests in its roadshow presentation.
Interesting. Now, I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on Casper IPO. It is, I think, one of the most high-profile IPOs so far this year. And the price movement was pretty interesting. Shares were up 13% on the first day of trading, and then they plunged, and they are still trading below the IPO price of $12. They are around $10 or something like that. Now, it's another money-losing company with a very innovative product, but no shortage of competitors. And Casper was valued at $1.1 billion in a private funding round last year. And now its market capitalization is below $400 million. So what do you think of this IPO?
I think the Casper IPO for 2020 is a little bit like the WeWork almost IPO of 2019. I think that WeWork, maybe if they started out on the right note, they might have ended up the way Casper did. At least they would have gotten the company public. It hasn't been a good IPO, and it's because WeWork and Casper and others like it have been overvalued in the private market. I mean, to have a valuation at your last round of $1+ billion, and by the way, $400 million in sales and losing $100 million, so we know it was a risky business and competitive. Still, you know, they've accomplished some very interesting things, but to be valued where it was in the private market was really challenging. They realized that, and actually, when they put their initial terms together, they launched it at a $700 million valuation. But investors didn't see even that made any sense. They got it down even further. And so it ended up being priced at $12, and unfortunately, it's now at $10. So the current valuation of $400 million is about 40% of its mm-hmm. private valuation.
Right.
So something's wrong with the... There is a disconnect that's significant between private and public valuations. And there are likely to be a lot of others because the companies that have waited to come out, some are waiting because they don't want to come and have the valuation discount.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, why a lot of the capital's been locked up in the private market for a long time in certain companies where they haven't moved forward because they're thinking, well, maybe if we improve the operations, we'll be able to hold up that private valuation. But it's a sign that the private valuations have to come down. Mm-hmm. Again, like WeWork and I think Casper for 2020, it's a wake-up call for what's happening in the private markets that are, you know, that there has to be a little more concern about valuations because it will affect ultimately the returns on these venture funds. They have to turn around and report to limited partners, and if their returns are below the public market, they'll lose the capital that's going into their segment of the market. And as I see it, from the studies I've seen, the returns on venture are below over the last 10 years, the average return on the S&P 500.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
So the venture portfolios have to produce the returns that they're going to lose assets from that asset class.
I agree. So one of the hottest stocks this year is Virgin Galactic, and they took a different route to go public. That was late last year. They merged with a special purpose acquisition company, Social Capital Hedosophia. And in fact, I read that more than a quarter of the offerings last year were these special purpose acquisition companies. Could you tell us a little bit about these companies and why Virgin Galactic took that route?
Sure. And there are a number of them. Virgin Galactic might be a good example of a success story.
Right.
At least there's a lot of hope in that stock price right now. It's there's interest in space, and so they've had a big boost along with Tesla and a few other of these, futuristic companies that investors feel could be worth a significant amount of money down the road. But in general, the structure is a very inefficient structure from a capital raising standpoint. It's a blind pool initially, and units are sold. And the reason, and it's generally a an entrepreneur or an experienced executive is behind this with the idea that they will be finding a company to acquire over the next two years. If they don't, they return the money back. Investors initially in these are hedge funds because it's an op. You can park money in a SPAC if you're a hedge fund and have a stable treasury yield while you're waiting for the option to participate in the acquisition that may come about. Some of these funds return money because they can't find them. Others, when they find them, they perform poorly. Some don't, and so there's an appeal there. But it's a very expensive way to make money in terms of the capital raising function, because there's a sponsor's fee. There's the process of taking the SPAC public, which has its costs, legal and accounting. Then the acquisition includes very extensive merger documents. There's proxy to have shareholders vote on whether they want to be a part of it. So this is happening, I believe, out of the frustration that the private equity firms have in getting their companies public. So when the experienced executive buys a private equity-backed company, it helps the liquidity process for these PE firms. And so we're seeing it as just another way to circumvent the traditional IPO process. And it's fine, but there's a little, it's a very inefficient way to raise capital, a lot more inefficient than doing an IPO if you're looking at a pure company and reading, investing directly in a company. Here it's all about the option to hang out for a couple of years and reduce your downside side, and then if you want to participate in the merger. Companies that go through mergers, they have to really work their shareholder basis because the shareholder base turns over. So the requirement to focus on getting the resulting company, if the acquisition goes through, to have investor attention and interest and find valuations that make sense, get the information out to investors is challenging. So it's a very labored process that is a reaction, I believe, to the fact that IPO investors are they're not stepping in with both feet. 99, 2000, we're not going to see again. The internet bubble, that's not happening. So investors are a lot smarter in the IPO market. They're institutional, and so they're not overpaying for companies.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, the companies are being valued related to other companies in the market. Now, if the other companies in the market are expensive, which we may be at this point, but it's in line with those companies as opposed to just buying anything that sounds like ride sharing or, it may sound good. We don't have that kind of investor in the IPO market now.
So Virgin Galactic has been in news, of course, because the stock is up more than 200%. And also probably it's the only, company, the only stock that investors can buy to get exposure to space tourism, which is, of course, a very exciting, area. Were there any other notable SPAC deals last year?
I would not really highlight them because recent SPACs, the recent ones that are done are sitting there. Nothing's happened. They haven't made their acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
And they usually take about 2 years to do it. So I think you've highlighted maybe the one more spectacular one. And there, I would say there are a group of investors, maybe that is a little reminiscent of 99, 2000, who don't care about price but want to participate
right.
in space.
Okay. Let's talk about your ETF now. It's the Renaissance IPO ETF with the ticker symbol IPO, very easy to remember. Tell us a little bit about the index and the top holdings. Currently are Uber Technologies, 12% weight, Spotify about 7%, DocuSign about 6%. Lyft is also there with about 4% weight. Tell us a little bit about some of these top holdings too.
Sure. Now, the structure for the index, and the ETF tracks the IPO index, is to own newly public companies before they're included in major indices. Mm-hmm. So it's a it's the last 2 years worth of the larger IPOs that have been done. And the returns on this product are not from getting shares on the offering. Right. These are shares that are bought and sold once the new companies start trading. And it's a portfolio that's rebalanced every quarter, so the old names go out, new names come in. And unless it's a very large name, in which case about a week or so after the IPO, we will include the very large ones. So it's a way to get exposure to a segment of new economy companies before they're included in indices. So, for example, the S&P 500 took 2 years to include Facebook. Facebook was a constituent in this index. And so there are returns here. And I mentioned the returns on the index were 35% in 2019. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so far this year, they're very strong. And the reason is, the nice part about the product is it's a rules-based fund that sort of takes the emotion out of buying and selling these companies. And also mm-hmm. it's less expensive because the fund trades portfolio has less costly trading. And also this fund gets the benefit of lending out securities to short sellers. Mm-hmm. And then that revenue goes into the fund. So it's a more efficient way, and it has the tax efficiency of an in-kind ETF. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of efficiencies associated with it. So it's you would add it to, if you own the SPDR or an ETF that represents the market, it's a sleeve that you don't own. And it's been very good. Investors are looking for these new companies. And I mentioned taking the emotion out of it because mm-hmm. when Uber traded down, I think, 43% right after its lockup release, mm-hmm. I don't know who would look at that and say, when do you buy Uber? Is this the time after having watched how poorly it traded? Mm-hmm. Well, our product at the end of every quarter rebalances, and over the rebalance in December, Uber had enough shares to make it the top holding in the ETF. And on this rules basis, it has really helped our performance. The other area of performance that has been really strong are these software service companies, notably DocuSign, which is year-to-date, it's up 22%, Anaplan, a financial SaaS company, up 20%, Slack, up 22%, Avalara, which does tax reconciliations, up 25%, Zscaler, which is a cyber SaaS company, up 37%, Zoom Video, up 42%. So this software service segment, we have high exposure to it because it's a new area of the economy, and they manifest themselves in new IPOs. So that's what it's supposed to do, to gain exposure here, and it's had a very good record, certainly over the last 3 years of outperformance and over a longer period, depending on what index you use. I think if you're going to look at the Russell 2000, you'll see very strong outperformance of the ETF relative to other small cap, mid cap kinds of companies. Those that have dragged on our Spotify, mm-hmm. I think I mentioned, as a whole big holding, but it hasn't really performed. It hasn't been bad, but, and then Beyond Meat, we've been on that kind of rodeo ride for Beyond Meat, but I will say year to date, Beyond Meat has had really strong performance. Anyway, I think a big number. I can't remember. Oh, here it is. They're up 61% year to date.
So Beyond Meat had
to know when to buy and sell it.
Right. Yeah, having a rules-based methodology really helps. So Beyond Meat had actually surged to over $234 last year, and then it came down, and it is doing very well this year again. What are your thoughts on this company? And my producer here, Danny, was interested in your thoughts on Lyft, which is Uber's competitor, but Lyft hasn't done so well this year.
Well, okay, just to point out Lyft, I think the reason is that Lyft isn't letting investors know about how soon they'll turn profitable.
Okay.
And that's the difference between Lyft and Uber. Uber is committed to and has brought more closer its profitability plans.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a difference. And I will say, in Beyond Meat, we're waiting to see Impossible come out, which is its competitor. So it's really there as the one main publicly traded non-meat-based protein product. And what happened with Beyond in the beginning is that it actually turned profitable before it had guided investors. So it turned profitable within the first year of that IPO.
Mm-hmm.
And that made a huge difference at first. Investors, that kind of trigger really makes a difference for investors when they can see the profitability. So it traded very well then. The ups and downs of this company have been, it's trading on future. It's profitable, but on future growth and future distribution wins, new products, and, with the fear that isn't this easy enough for other companies to do it, and other big companies are aiming their guns at this company, all the other big food companies. So I think that's the reason for that kind of trading. I think it's very difficult to figure out the right time to be an owner of Beyond Meat, but you can own it in our portfolio.
Do you expect Impossible Foods to go public anytime soon?
It's rumored.
Okay, that would be an interesting IPO.
It should.
Okay.
Yeah, and it'll take some product. It'll certainly their valuations will then be connected, which is at first what happened to Uber and Lyft. And I think really now it's just Lyft really needs to talk about profits, and I think that will make a difference in the stock price.
Okay, sure. So I noticed that Virgin Galactic is not in the portfolio. Any reason why it has not been included?
Yes. Our portfolio does not include, companies have to be operating companies to be in this portfolio. The SPAC that existed for 2 years before acquiring Virgin Galactica only was just a blind pool of cash, and we wouldn't hold that, and we don't get the benefit of the operating success or whatever of the company over that period. So it just doesn't fit into our methodology. This is true. We operate a non-U.S. Product, an international IPO index and ETF, and we're selective about making sure the markets that the stocks are, that they're operating companies, number one, and then also that the markets are liquid. And for example, when Saudi Aramco came public, it would have normally been a candidate for that ETF, our international ETF, but the Tadawul market, the Saudi Arabian market, is not an open market to all investors. So we deemed it not to be a liquid market for our products because there are only certain people that apply can be and qualify can be an investor in Tadawul. However, if Saudi Aramco opens up and lists in another liquid market, it'll be a candidate for our international ETF. So there's some rules. The rules are to make sure that we have the right liquidity in it and that, we're dealing with operating companies. There are good index rules for good reasons, we think, that it should be operated that way.
Okay, great. That's all we have time for today. Kathy, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Nina.
Thanks for listening. If you want to learn more about these IPOs and IPO ETFs, please visit renaissancecapital.com. Make sure to be on the lookout for the next edition of ETF Spotlight, and also make sure to subscribe. If you have any comments or questions, please email podcast@zacks.com.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.